And mahalo for listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Felicia, and I am in here for Out of the Box today. Normally, I am Kauai Soapbox, but sometimes as public affairs programmers, we switch around a little bit. Our show today, this much of it is designed by Jonathan Jay. So thank you, Jonathan, if you are listening. We're going to have many topics, from the campaigns to the courts to the canoe. That would be Pua Case, who is one of the Mauna Kea protectors. She's a teacher, Hawaiian practitioner, Hawaiian cultural practitioner, teacher. She is calling in from New York City at about 4:30. She was there to welcome in the Hokulea. And at 5:30, Nihi does a sub show from a little shorter show, a half-hour show with Jonathan called What's for Dinner, and I'll be helping, Marshall's in here with me, we will be helping Nihi do her show. So, we thank you for listening, and Out of the Box was made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kalaheo Chiropractic and Qingyang Village, both great, great programs. The sponsors, helpers, and people to work with.
Aloha, listeners of KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. As a beacon of free speech, KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. KKCR brings you Hawaiian culture and music, independent voices and choices like Democracy Now!, otherwise shut out from the corporate media. During this program, please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you and become a sustaining member. Your monthly support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana in the center of the Pacific, mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
This is Ron Wiley, KKCR, Hanalei, and KAQA, Kilauea, Kauai Community Radio.
Kalaheo Wellness Center, natural pain relief services, providing gentle chiropractic acupuncture, therapeutic massage, nutritional wellness, postural training, cold laser therapy, and spinal decompression. Open Monday through Friday, now a second location in Kapa'a, 822-0711, or Southside Center at 332-5580, or online at kalaheochiropractic.com.
Qingyang Shopping Village proudly supports Kauai's community radio by underwriting this program. Qingyang, the heart of Hanalei. Mahalo, Jeff Culverhouse, for your support.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Aloha, Marshall. How are you?
Aloha, Felicia. I am doing well. How are you?
I am doing really well.
Good to see you.
Thank you so much. And so much activities and important things going on and great opportunities for people to participate and make a difference. And, you know, well, one thing that I mentioned at the very beginning, the Hokulea that has been traveling around the world, that is our voyaging canoe. It was really brought on the renaissance of uncovering what had been mistaught about Hawaiian history. There was a window of time when there was a little bit of disinformation going around that, like, hey, these people, you know, they got in a canoe and they just got lucky. They ended up drifting over here to Hawaii. And when the Hokulea was designed and they learned how to navigate again from one of the Micronesian men, I'm forgetting his name right at the moment, and they went out and they proved that they could do it, it was a really a huge statement and a really big time of reinvesting in the culture of Hawaii. It brought on the Constitutional Convention and some of the laws that are almost crazy to believe that happened. Like, you weren't allowed to speak Hawaiian, you couldn't name your child a Hawaiian given name, things like that. They got upended, and they started having the charter schools that taught in Hawaiian, and so that language has come back. So the Hokulea really brought many new thoughts and ideas and a resurgence. I would call it the Hawaiian Renaissance came back, and more with the music and the different cultural pieces. And in its latest voyage, it is circumnavigating the globe, and it has gone, it went west of here, so to India and down around Africa and across over to Brazil, and now it's going up the East Coast. And so a few days back, it made it to New York City. I have a little call out to Liko Martin. Maybe he might call in. I don't know. That's unconfirmed yet. Sometimes he helps with this show. But he's been doing something called the Red Ribbon Tour. Red Ribbons is what the Queen put out about her. And it's a symbol of the taking of the Hawaiian nation. And when she went to communicate to the government about what had happened, this Red Ribbon Tour is symbolic of that. So Liko has also been there at New York to be receiving in the Hokulea. So that is symbolic of many, many things, including, maybe unrighteous government. You know, Tuesday was the primaries for the United States, particularly presidential election in six states. Four of which, the big ones, went to Hillary Clinton. Many of us, myself included, I'll just be open about my bias, very, very disappointed at seeing her having a strong win. There is a plethora of stories and information that's out there that, you know, infers that it wasn't a righteous win. It seemed like there was a pretty strong win, but many vote suppressed, things like that. So I'm not really sure. I'm not prepared to go into that on the show today. But when we're talking about the Hokulea, last Tuesday we were talking about the Papahanao Mokoa Kea expansion. That would be the Northwest Hawaiian Islands has... Right now, it's called a marine monument. So a monument is, with a stroke of a pen, it doesn't take that much agreement. It might be part of the legacy of President Obama to leave this what is said to be a preservation area, trying to preserve the fish and the wildlife, the culture in these Upper Hawaiian Islands. So, some of the fishermen don't feel the same way about that. They are concerned about, I think, even more than it, whether the local fishermen around here actually go up into that area. You know, what I'm understanding is it feels like a territory grab. It feels to them like, I saw the word mission creep, that, you know, they'll take that whole area of the fishing, but then maybe go all the way down the Hawaiian Islands. There's a lot of different fears and concerns that are out there. And, you know, we do see mission creep happen all over the place. So I don't have a strong bias on this issue. I see value in both opinions on it. But what I am thankful for is three of our guests that were on by phone, that's Paka, also Isaac Harp, that's his name, Paka's his nickname, Paka and Tammy Hart, and Kealoha Piskiota. They are all coming over here. They said that on the radio on Tuesday, that maybe they would do it. Well, they went out, they booked the tickets. So this Monday, the three of them, and then the number of people who live here who are you know, promoting and feeling good about this marine monument expansion that's going to be 200 miles in each direction beyond where it is right now. So it's pretty large. So it'll be about 400 miles wide or more, and 1,250 miles long of a prohibited area in the ocean. So they are going to be at Kekiola Boat Harbor, hanging out down there on Monday, just to have talk story and sit around and hear what the different fishermen might think or feel, and see if there isn't some ways to make everybody comfortable in where this might go. And so Ke Aloha and Paka, they were on the original signatures of that letter.
Mm-hmm. So it's protected, or to be protected from fishing, but it would still be open to military uses, is that right?
Well, you can't protect anything from military use. Like, the military can use anywhere and everywhere that they want in the United States. So there is no protected area from the military. So it would be protected from fishing. It would be protected from recreational use. You know, you could get a permit maybe to do that, but it would be protected from people going in there. They're trying to, like, leave it as a closed out area. But yes, the military would have full range of that. I know there are people who are concerned about, well, if this is a federal area, what about the deep sea mining that is underway and happening in different places? It doesn't seem like it protects that, though. What our guest last Tuesday said was it gives more leverage to be able to protect against those things. And the Office of Hawaiian Affairs, along with the state of Hawaii, would be equal partners with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. So that is, you know, I'm glad that they're coming here, and they're going to be at Kapa'a Library at 5 p.m. for a general talk story, and they'll have a presentation at 6. So hanging out on the west side there at Kekiola Harbor, Boat Harbor, on the west side, in case people want to come and talk to them informally, informal time in Kapa'a, and then a full presentation at 6. So it is intending to be able to hear people and share ideas. Now, you mentioned about the military, and RIMPAC, could you look that up for me? Is it underway now? I heard it was underway, but what are the dates, the dates for it?
It is actually June 30th to August 4th.
June 30th to August 4th. All right, so maybe it isn't started yet. That is an area that can happen. I just did get a text in here from some of the people that are putting on this talk, so I'm going to read this to everybody, and then we're going to go back to what's going on with RIMPAC. With RIMPAC. But Isaac and Tammy Hart with Ke Aloha Piscioda, Hoku Cody, and Presley Wan will be at Kapa'a Library to talk to anyone interested in more information about the expansion proposal. Those with questions and comments should be there at 5 p.m., and they'll be available there till 8 p.m. So they really are looking to reach out and hear people's mana'o and speak about what's happening. So something that I noticed, we've had, and especially Jonathan has had, this guy, Dar Jamal, who wrote an article that came out today about the Navy. And Dar Jamal, he's a friend of Jonathan's. He was with one of the major news networks, and then he was with Al Jazeera. He was one of the embedded reporters when they did the Iraq invasion. And so he's a very seasoned reporter. But he had written, I see that the date is a little bit earlier. But the headline is Navy secretly conducting electromagnetic warfare training on Washington roads. And so it says, without public notification of any kind, the U.S. Navy has secretly been conducting electromagnetic warfare testing and training on public roads in western Washington state for more than 5 years. So he goes on to, you know, back up that claim, and there's a lot of links to other stories and where it has, you know, footnotes to source documents. So it's, there's quite a bit there. And the reason that I'm bringing this up, I feel warm towards the commander of the base. I really appreciate his willingness to come in on KKCR and talk about the environmental impact study for the harm that can be happening. We saw that they did get a permit for 12 million takes over the next 5 years. So that seems like a lot. And Terry Lilly was in here, and Terry takes a lot of heat for being what's called speculative, but he has been speaking about microwave usage and that is hurting the reef. The Navy was good at wanting to come together and talk about that. It hasn't gotten further. They don't move that fast. Maybe to have Marine Studies do some graduate work in studying to see if, in fact, that damage is happening. But, you know, when I was looking at this article, it talks about overwhelming evidence of harm. And, the overwhelming evidence of harm is what they're speaking about is, you know, personal health. And, you know, I don't want to make people worried, but, you know, it's really very damaging. In here, it's talking about even just, you know, like cell phone towers and cell phones, that those do some damage. But this is a magnitude of scale much more difficult. And they have weaponized lasers and microwaves. And it's a powerful type of radar known as active electronically scanned array. So, you know, even on their own webpage, I'm seeing this here, they talk about the radio frequency hazard avoidance concerns. And so we are being told here, at least in this article that seems to be backed up pretty strongly, about the damage that can be happening from the microwave energy. There's what we learned from Dr. Bob Richman on the show last Tuesday was that there's going to be a conference starting Sunday through Friday. I don't remember if he said that was on Oahu or if it was on the Big Island. It might be on the Big Island of Hawaii. Do you remember, Marshall?
Don't remember.
This is for scientists. It's not really for the lay people. The Sunday night before, they're going to have an open event, and they're going to have a few public events. It's probably pretty similar to the telescope, the astronomy, International Astronomy Convention that I did get to attend as a reporter. I was able to go in there with a press pass. There might be somebody that can go into this reef event this coming up week with a press pass and go in and see. And so I'm kind of putting the kahea out to anybody who might be listening.
Kahea.
Kahea. I'm sorry. That means a call for, letting it know, hey, people need help. It's like saying, hey, you know, there's people might need help with this. So if people could go to the Reef Damage Conference and listen in and hear what, you know, they're coming up with. This is an international event. And we're seeing profound reef damage all over the place. So that's the one thing, you know, we can say, we could be very specific that it is pesticide runoff, or too many wells being drilled, or too much nutrient content, meaning poop, going into the water that's killing it. It could be global warming. I mean, there. It's kind of like, why do we all have cancer? It's like, well, why is the reef dying? I mean, I think there's probably multiple contributing factors.
Right.
But so that is a discussion that will be happening there. But I saw how all three of these issues sort of play together with both the intention to preserve the waters around the northwestern Hawaiian Islands. I think everybody's in agreement that there is a lot of value in taking care of that. But, you know, is that in conflict with RIMPAC being there? I did not make it to the Oceans for Peace event. That tends to be the whale people. They get very concerned about the sonar and all the blasting, and these animals, dolphins and things that are really super sensitive to sound and their own radar system that helps them navigate in the ocean. And they're, you know, they don't have a quiet ocean to live in. And so it's really problematic. We have had less whales in Kauai this winter, but, you know, I don't know if that is related or not. They aren't doing those actions in the wintertime. So that's a piece.
Right. I made it a less popular vacation spot for whales.
Yeah, China. Like I'm hoping they went to Maui or they went somewhere else, right. You know, like right. that they're okay, that they're just not here. And then, you know, it seems like whales and dolphins are said to be pretty bright, that they can navigate that far. They certainly have something that we don't. Next Tuesday, the 14th, the Kauai Planning Department is having this general plan update. And I have been encouraging people to really participate in it. People might not understand the strength and importance of an event like this or this effort, but it does set up our zoning efforts and issues that are coming up. And so this next Tuesday, the 14th, I won't be there. I usually go, but I'm going to be here in the studio, so I'm not going to be there for that. That's about housing and social justice. It's a big deal. So if people have ideas about that, it's called plankauai.gov, right? Can you look that up? It's plankauai.gov, and let's give people an email address. So if you have ideas or what's important, I would say they really do want to help. They really do want to take in input, and we're said to have 25% housing insecure. We will, and can you double check if it's the 14th or the 21st?
Will do.
So I believe it's the 14th, but it could be the 21st. But I want to, next week, one of the things that we will be speaking about, I've been looking at the Airbnb effort. I've never done Airbnb. I don't have a smartphone, and I don't tend to utilize, I've never utilized that service, but people are having some pretty strong complaints about that.
Right, so that's actually on June 21st.
21st, okay. Yeah. So when I'm going to talk about it somewhat on the 14th, it's to set it up for the 21st.
Right, so it's 2:30 to 5 o'clock. And that website is plankauai.com.
Plankauai.com. And is there an email address for people to put in information? Because maybe people can't make it. This is in the Planning Commission room right there in the main area of the county buildings, you know, right near the mayor, between like the Department of Motor Vehicles and the mayor's office. But big deal to do with housing. Many people are really enjoying the Airbnb opportunities, both to make money and be able to afford their lives. And when they travel and they go places, it works for them to have a more affordable and a little bit more local kind of way of experiencing a place. But the neighbors around this industry aren't that happy, because it can push people out of housing. Somebody's got a spare bedroom. Somebody's got something that can make a little bit better money on Airbnb. And Airbnb isn't designed to really layer in the transient accommodation tax. It sort of upends the zoning ordinances as they are now.
Email address, plankauai@kauai.gov.
Plankauai@kauai.gov. Okay, so that's coming up. The week after that, what we will be talking about in here, one of the topics, is what's happening with the Humane Society. How do we help the Humane Society to have a lower kill rate? As a programmer, I'm going to, of course, hear more complaints than I am going to hear happy stories. But we do hear a lot of stories of people who feel like their pet was killed needlessly, an animal that they picked up and nursed back to health, took to the Humane Society healthy so the family can come get it or somebody else could do it. They leave their phone number and say, hey, if nobody comes gets it, I'll take the dog, and discover, well, the dog's been euthanized within a day or two. I haven't confirmed that. These are routine stories coming from all different kinds of directions, and there are animal rights activists who have been directly contacting Kauai Community Radio. That's one of the reasons that we That's one of our principles why we're here, our mission statement, to help the underserved voice. We have had the executive director and the head of the board come in here. They say there's not a problem, but it seems that it's been consistent still. People who can't adopt an animal, people who struggle to take care of their animal, and certainly the most euthanized animals is the cats. There is the bird people, wild bird people, really are trying fervently to protect the wild birds. And domestic cats are problems for that. And domestic birds are, domestic cats often will kill the birds, so it seems that there is a goal to really eradicate certainly the feral cat problem. It's easier said than done, but even neighborhood cats are said to be doing some damage. So this is KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, and I have my caller, Auntie Pua Case, who is from the island of Hawaii, who has been, I would say, an amazing cultural practitioner, activist, one of the key people who has helped to protect Mauna Kea. She has been in New York, or she's in New York. She's calling from New York, and I'm going to bring her on the air. So KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, Felicia with Kauai Soapbox, and Auntie Pua Case from Hawaii Island. Aloha, are you there?
I am. Aloha, and aloha to all of our ohana from Kauai. It's really good to be able to talk to all of you and to all of the listeners who are tuning in from all over the Pai Aina. I'm so happy to make this connection with you folks this afternoon.
Well, thank you. And you are in New York City right now, correct?
Yes, I am in New York City. I'm actually in Williamsburg, which is in Brooklyn right at the moment.
Wonderful. And so it must be late there. Thank you for calling in on that. And before we talk about the Hokulea and New York, I have a handful of questions for you about New York. But I was announcing some of the events that are coming up, and I believe, and I'm asking you, I don't know, I believe Friday, March 17th is an important court date in Hilo relative to the 30-meter telescope. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. It is the next pre-conference meeting, if you will, and the decision, I believe, will be made there on the other applicants who have applied for standing in the case. There are maybe two others that have applied for pro-TMT standing, and then many others who have applied for protection of Mauna Kea standing to enter into the case. So this is where that's supposed to be decided on that day, and we'll see if they get through every one of them and what the outcome will be. Presently, there are six of us who were in the case previous, the Mauna Kea Hui, as we're referred to, and those were six petitioners. So, you know, we're just going to see who makes it into the case this time around, and that's going to be on the 17th.
And I will say that, I met you up there, and I appreciated your coming into the studio here. It was a long shot that the protectors, especially when you guys started, maybe almost it seems like 2 years ago or maybe 18 months ago, it was October of 2014, if I recall correctly. It was a small group of very committed people working to stop yet another telescope going up there, a very large telescope, and the movement happened, and the court, the Supreme Court, the Hawaii State Supreme Court, sided with the Mauna Kea protectors that the state had not followed the protocol correctly for getting that permitted. Do I have that correct?
Yes, you do. You have that correct. You know, the thing is, there's always been protection of the mountain, those who have stood way before us. And if anyone is not familiar with that, they can always go back to Temple Under Siege, the film that was created by Namakaoka Aina Palikapu. I'm blanking on it right now, sitting here in this little space. But Namakaoka Aina created a film called Temple Under Siege, and they can take a look at that for the history. And yes, there were Sikhs and there were supporters at that time, but I think what was key was that even though we were going into a Supreme Court hearing later, and we're in the works of that, that they were going to allow construction starting with the groundbreaking. And when that happened, we had to step it up as well. And we had to say enough is enough, and the groundbreaking was halted. And then we were on the mountain ever since.
And, you know, I have said on the air a number of times, to me it was kind of a Gandhi moment. It's 9,000 feet up there, and you guys are up there almost 9 months, yeah?
Yes.
A night and day.
You know, it takes everything. It takes everything you have. It takes a commitment. It takes making a decision that either you're going to be there 24/7, you're going to be at the bottom praying, you're going to be there once if you have to, you're going to fly in from Kauai perhaps or another island, whatever people could contribute, whatever people could commit to, every moment of it mattered. And it really didn't even matter if you were on the mountain or if you were downside or if you were across the world praying for us or holding a sign or posting on Facebook. Everybody mattered. And everything everyone did was important. And I think that really brought a unification again to a movement that was relatively new in that active stage. And so, you know, here we are. We're going into contested case two, and we are preparing to be stronger than we were the first time around, to really be well-researched, to be ready to go into this court case and really to stand for as ever, however long it takes to stand, because it's not just about Mauna Kea. It's about every place, and it's about our ways, and it's about our water, and it's about the mountain and every place in between. So Mauna Kea is the one that has perhaps for many of us made us stronger than our fear, more aware of policies, procedures, government, and what we need to do to ensure that for the next seven generations, we have a Hawaii that is intact as much to our ability as we can ensure that for our children, grandchildren. So this is like a defining moment, although not to say there's never been this going on, but this is a defining moment when we are rallying and we are ready. And there is a movement that is very positive, and it is sacred, and it's based in that, to me at least. And I couldn't be prouder of everyone that has said, I am in whatever way that means.
And Auntie Pua Case, so, I know when our Kumu Kehau was part of the whole Polynesian Triangle, we went and did a very significant oli in the morning as the rising of the sun, and that happened in many, many places around the world, but particularly around the Pacific. And I remember, if not that day, right then, right in there, you know, they had snow in July on the mountain, and that helped another action that was going to happen. And, you know, then I read online, and it says, oh, it snows in July, so I did a little research, and yeah, it did 25 years ago. Right. So there is things that, you know, whether people believe it or they don't believe it, very, very big events, you know, that are happening and people come together. And Poliahu means snow. Yes. It's like the Kinulau of snow. Do I have that right?
Puliya, who is the snow goddess, yes, if you want to put it in that way. And I think the more you are connected to whatever environment that you're from, you really begin to see that life is more than what you can see with your eye. Mm. It really is about what you learned from your grandparents or what you read in the old stories and the communication between the other side and your ancestors and yourself becomes very real, at least for us on a mountain, when we are looking with more than our eyes and we are feeling and we are beginning to understand that we are one with those elements and that they are indeed still here. And if we listen, they are speaking to us and they are guiding us and telling us how to stand. And, you know, yes, that is unfamiliar to some people. But when you commit with all that you have, with your mind and your heart and your spirit and everything that makes you you, and you believe and you trust and you have faith and you align yourself with what you know is right for that place, for the continuation of something in its purest form, when you really step into it, yes, it is more than. It is everything.
And there's so much palpable love up there in that movement, just palpable. And this Sunday on Oahu in Honolulu, they're having another Aloha Aina March in unity. And that is, you know, partly in strength for the court cases that are coming up this week, including the one on Friday for the Mauna, but also the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is in Honolulu, and on Wednesday the 15th, and I will be over there for that. They are going to be looking at the cases in which the large agriculture companies have sued Kauai, Maui, and Hawaii over their own self-determination to try and limit the impacts. So there's the Unity March last summer was Mauna Kea overdevelopment, harsh agriculture practices. And so there's another one happening this Sunday. And are you going to be back by that time, or will you still be?
I'm not back by that time, but I am going to be in a ceremony with the Mohawk Native Americans. And really, that's about unification as well. You know, when we make these alliances, either we see it through sacred Facebook or we make these connections and we stand for one another and we stand with one another. And these Native Americans stopped the pipeline, and I'm going to head up to their country to sit in ceremony with them. And really, it's all about gratitude for what we are all doing right now and recognizing that. So I'm going to bring this march into that ceremony. And in that way, I will still be included in it, even though I'm so far away from it. And I think that, too, is the beauty of this movement, because the movement is really not just about Mauna Kea or any other one place. It really is about unifying people who are going through similar situations everywhere around the world. And when we say, I stand with you, and they say, I stand with you as well, that is when we are indeed a mighty force. My daughter Havani will be at the march. She's been in the movement against Monsanto from the very beginning, so she'll be singing there, and she will represent us at the march there. And I have to say, those early marches and the Monsanto kind of that whole situation that occurred pretty much before Mauna Kea really became a big movement, that had a real place in the beginnings of us unifying. And I never want to leave that out, because a lot of that was on the island of Kauai. So to all of you from Kauai listening, you had and have a really significant part and place in what happened to us. And I just want to say that that was the beginning for me of where I became stronger. I was participating in those marches and rallies. And so when it came to the Mauna, I was already prepared. And I already had some, you know, practice in that. So mahalo to you, Kauai, and to the other islands that stepped up for that.
And mahalo, Auntie Pua Case, because thank you for acknowledging that. And I want to give an extra special shout out to Dustin Barca, Fern Rosensteel, and Eli Frank, who were, you know, they had the first march here, but like Dustin, he was with Uncle Walter Riddy, was able to do the five marches in March. And what it showed us was how we could all come together. And right before that, the Public Land Development Corporation that had come in to shift the Department of Land and Natural Resources, Kuleana, from being to protect and conserve the natural lands, it shifted it to be to exploit for revenue. And it took, you know, a massive effort from all the different islands working together to repeal that. And right behind it, you know, people are saying, hey, what about our ag lands? And then right behind it was the mountain. And so people have been coming together and working hard. And it has been kind of like a baton going around the different islands. Molokai has certainly had really strong effort, and want to acknowledge Maui. Everybody's working on it. Maui, you know, has a court case even on Wednesday about the contamination to their waters and through these injection wells that are going out into the oceans. You know, it's from the mountain to the sea that we're not acting responsibly.
And through all of this, you know, whenever you mention names or when we see faces, for many of us, we are all working on everyone else's as well as our own stances. And so that's another thing that's been so beautiful about this. Like those whom you mentioned have stood on the mountain. We've come to Kauai or the other island. It has been an honor to be able to walk into any one of our places. And just be able to come in and say, I will stand with you for your water. Because we're all connected. There is nothing separate when it comes to our islands. Indeed, when it comes to the whole earth. But at least for our islands, we are all connected. And through all of this, we have confirmed that and strengthened that and really formed true friendships and relationships. And really, I wouldn't change a thing of what happened on the Mauna because of what has happened in the unification of us all. So, you know, it is what it is, and it has brought so many of us together.
Well, speaking to that, you're in New York City because of the Hokulea, correct?
Yes, I am.
So can you share with us what has been your experience over there, what you've seen come underway, and what it's been like to be receiving the Hokulea, maybe who else has been there too?
Sure. You know, I happen to have brought along 8 Kanoʻokaʻaina students from Waimea, as well as some chanters. And when we had made this journey for Hokulea, we really had come up, yes, to greet the canoe, of course, and the crew members, but also because there has been a rock, a pohaku from Mauna Kea, on the canoe ever since it left Hilo, that we had gifted the canoe with. And that rock had made an agreement with us that it would go and be the beacon for the voyage, and it would strengthen the canoe and protect it. So I came all the way to New York to chant to that pohaku from Mauna Kea and say thank you for so far being the beacon and the guide for the voyage. And so that was my purpose. And these 8 students came with me really on a separate journey to go from New York to Washington, D.C., but to help us to chant to the rock. So you see, there's still a spirit here. There's still tradition here. We're coming all this way to actually say thank you to the Mauna, because the Mauna is still on board. And when we got there, it was really beautiful. The most beautiful thing, I think, when I think about it, is having all of our people from Hawaii here, that have moved here, that live here, that have been gone from the island, some of them for a long time, all coming together, which they did, and to be ready and to honor the canoe and the crew and really to take good care of them while they were here. And also the Native Americans bringing the different tribal people together, their leaders and their youth, come together with the natives of Hawaii and the local people as well. And to all together, as in every other place I've ever been, when the canoe comes in, that's what the canoe does, yeah? It brings everyone together and really serves the purpose of reconnecting everyone from Hawaii who live here back to Hawaii again.
And
when you see them chanting and crying and having a celebration for the canoe and for the crew members, that is so important. It's just what this place needed.
It's like feeding the roots. And then how about for the New Yorkers who have never lived in Hawaii? Did there be a turnout from that community? Was New York City itself, that is not necessarily part of the Hawaiian Ohana, did they respond?
I have to say, in the events that I participated in, it was mostly those who had some small connection. I think those who had no connection at all, they were very curious. And seeing us all there brought them closer, and they wanted to find out. Many people came up to us who just happened to be passing by and who didn't know a thing, saying, what's this all about? And when we explained it, they were truly in awe of just the fact that Hokulea was, one, making a voyage around the world, and two, that the message that it was spreading, the Malama Honua message, was significant to them. They could relate to that, they could understand that. So I think in that way, it was just as important for them.
For our listeners who don't know the words Malama Honua, can you help them understand what that message is? What does Malama Honua mean for a person who does not know that?
Well, if you just take the translation of it quite simply to say, you know, Malama, to take care of, the Honua, the earth, you know, it's very basic, but yet it's very complex. And it's really about just taking a look around and seeing where it is that you can contribute, basically, on taking better care, whether it's your home, the land you live on, the island you live on, or expanding out into the ocean. We have so many situations facing the earth right now that we don't even have to go into. I mean, you can see it on the news. People are standing against so many things, whether it's fracking or pipelines or whatever it is. It's about really stepping forward and saying, what is it that we have to do to ensure that this earth is healthy, that it can still sustain us, that we have a connection to it? And what are you going to do, and what am I going to do?
Right, because
so
it takes everyone.
Very basically, taking care of the earth, what are you going to do right around you? Or it can take you even farther than that to expand upon what can we really do for the whole of the earth, from the mountains to the sea, everywhere. So it's really what you make of it and what you take from it and where you step in and how much you do. But really, in reality, we all have to do something.
And
I think this is a time, you know, where no one's going to be able to be passive for too much longer. But the message is clear. the message is there, and Hokulea is spreading that message, and many people around the world have their own messages that have tied into that. So again, it's nothing that one individual or one people are doing. It's really a collaboration. It's a connective reason for us all to start to unify together for the betterment of the earth.
And
it's quite beautiful.
When you speak of other people carrying a message, did you see Liko Martin and Laulani Teo? Were they there?
You know what? I'm glad you asked that question, because I totally did see them on the first day on the Sunday at the celebration. And they actually sang there, as well as Leon and Malia, also sang for the event. And it was beautiful to have their voices there, because they have some of those first songs that were tied to Hokulea from the 70s on. And so we were able to bring back or remember, reminisce about those earlier Hokulea days through their voices and their songs. So I would say that they were a really significant part of the celebration and the vibration of it. And also we had Kawila, Pua Kanahele's grandson, lead the Kipai Pai, or the traditional opening, because he's relocated here for school. So you had a large group of both Native and non-Native Hawaiians, but participating in the opening. And that was beautiful. So it's almost like you're at home, but you brought home here.
Uh-huh. And Liko and Laulani, they are doing what they call a red ribbon tour. And I know that
yes.
The red ribbon, and he's got a, you know, beautiful song that he wrote. Like, to me, I tease him and I tell him Bob Dylan is the Liko Martin of the United States. He has sort of had a chronology of what has happened in the political awakening of Hawaii. But the red ribbons, I know that has to do with Queen Liliuokalani. But can you help me explain that a little better, what the red ribbon means? Do you know?
Well, when I listened to Laulani and Liko talk about it, you know, they are bringing in just a short sentence, they're bringing in the spirit of the Queen and that time period and all of those things that happened to her and to Hawaii at that time. And really, one, bringing awareness to what happened then, how it impacts us today, and what the real situation in Hawaii is historically, but also doing that in a beautiful way through music, because music can open the hearts and the minds and the spirits of people so that they are open to listening. So they are taking a very old message and bringing it, making it anew, and taking it to places of significance where people will hear our message. And that is, you know, from New York all the way to, I know they're going to Washington, and they're being our ambassadors, really. And so we just wish them all the best, and I think it's going to be a beautiful journey for them.
Well, I think it'll be really beautiful, and I hope that they are able to awaken, you know, some of the awareness that's what's come, you know, with the Idle No More movement, all these movements that are happening, whether it's Brazil or, you know, India has their issues. Everybody's working to be protecting their sacred places. And I think that as we start to awaken, it's people are beginning to connect the dots, and that's one thing I have to give a shout out to the internet, because it brings us all together. It brings us all together.
Yes. And you know, I did want to say to really listeners everywhere, you know, yes, we are going into a very specific case, you know, to protect Mauna Kea, and really Mauna Kea is just a symbol, really. It's a very significant symbol of standing in dignity standing in integrity, standing in the best way that we can for our children, for our Hawaii, and to everyone else who's standing for a place, standing for food, standing for something more than themselves. Really, our hearts and our minds, we are aligning and we stand with you, and don't give up. You know, don't give up. We can't get too tired. We have to stay in the positive spirit of what we are doing, knowing that we are making change happen, knowing we are doing the best that we can. Even when we make mistakes, even when we go back half a step, we are still going forward 10 steps. And this is the time to do that. And we are all here for one another. So to stay as positive as we can in whatever we face and whatever we're going through, and just, you know, build one another up
and it takes
that we can.
It takes many voices. I know a couple days ago I had Paka, you probably know Isaac and Tammy Harp.
Yes.
And then Kay Aloha. She called in with them, and then they're coming next week. You know, we have this expansion of Papa Hanau Mokuakea, that marine monument, and so that's causing a bit of tension, because it's both what it has to do with the Office of Hawaiian Affairs being elevated, really, and maybe that's good for the monument. People are a little concerned that maybe that might be difficult for, you know, the effort towards sovereignty. They're not sure if that's the nation within a nation status, but they are coming Monday and Tuesday of next week to be talking to people here, and they'll be at Kikiola Boat Harbor. And so we have to all come together and talk about it. You know, it's really
and
hard to
know.
And
that's wonderful that all of this is being brought about right now. And really, in the end, it's all in the divine hand, you know, the ancestors. That's the way I look at it anyway. I'm going to do the best that I can, the very best that I can, and then I'm going to lift it back up to those who have come before us and just say, guide us. Guide us and let us do the best that we can. And that's all we can do. And just stay pono, you know, just stay aligned with what is best, not for me, not for the next person, but really for our Hawaii.
So
really for the land that we live on, you know, and what is best for our people. What is best for our people? And when I say our people, I really have to say that I'm looking first at the first people here. Because if you take care of the native people of your place, I really believe that everything around you knows that and recognizes that, and there are blessings from that. And it could be any first people. It just happens in Hawaii. It is us, the first people. So the place and the people, we have to take care of that. Because if we don't continue our cultural traditions, who's going to want to come and visit us here? You know, I mean, there's so much to this. That's just one layer. But it's really about taking care and ensuring that. And I just have to sit right in that. But I did want to make a correction, if I could, right now. Mm-hmm. When I talked about Temple Under Siege,
mm-hmm.
It was, I want to honor Puhi Pau, who made that film. And I think I did not say his name correctly. And I wanted to say that again. So I want to honor Puhi Pau, who has recently passed, and Joan, who made that film, Temple Under Siege. And if you haven't seen that, any of you out there, please do.
Temple Under Siege.
We all learn a lot when we look at that film.
And then being that you are in New York, and when you're speaking about all these issues, you know, we kind of have this parallel reality of being in Hawaii, yet lawfully or not, it's part of the United States. The United States puts their flag on this place anyway. And so on Tuesday, we had this primary. I will own my bias. I was very disappointed in seeing this kind of landslide for Hillary Clinton. Is that very much in the consciousness of the people over there? I mean, to me, I would think First Peoples would be supportive of Bernie Sanders. You know, it's, you know, to me, when I look at the difference, I don't see them as anywhere even close. One is for taking care of each other, and the other one, in my mind, is so pro-war. It's hard for me to watch this. I need to say, because it's 5 o'clock, you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia with Out of the Box, and Auntie Pua Case from Hawaii Island is on the phone with us. Is that much going on over in New York City regarding that?
You know, to tell you the truth, if I'm just, you know, popping in here and being on the street, I haven't heard anything, not a peep about any of them, whether it be Hillary, Donald Trump, or Bernie Sanders, except to say that when I am looking at Facebook or in my circle around me of Native people and young people and many different people, yes, it seems that most of the support is for Bernie Sanders. In fact, Knuckle Bear and Medicine for the People, who have deep connections to Hawaii Island, especially to Hilo, have recently joined up and opened Bernie's rallies and have really, you know, supported him. And I see that occurring because of Nako bringing in a lot of his fan base, and they are very consciously aware and really looking at, like you said, what Bernie stands for. So I say in the circle around me and within the Native community and non-Native community here, I would say, basically, I would say it would be for Bernie Sanders. However, when I'm walking around New York, I don't seem to see any movement of any kind or any concern or worry about it, which kind of surprised me as well.
Because it's like, you know, it's
right there in our face.
Right, you're right there in that town, and you know, New York City is, it's an island, but it is a very, very different island than is Kauai. I'll say that.
Yeah.
And
I think what I see more, as far as I'm going into a ceremony next week on the Shinnecock Reservation with elders who are flying in from different places throughout Turtle Island, and what we're gathering for. I mean, yes, all of this is very significant and important, election and everything. We're actually gathering to make a commitment to care for the water and really make our prayers known and our intention and go back to our ancestral ways and really get back to what's really important beyond all things, and that's water. And to think that we are coming together from all parts to come to a reservation and sit in a private circle and say, let's come back to what's really important. And what is that? Let's pray for water.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're going to be doing when everything else, the chaos can happen around you. But when you are grounded in what's important, you're going to pray for your water. And sitting in that circle next week, their Chief Arvo Looking Horse is going to be really looking at having World Peace and Prayer Day in Hawaii 2017. And you can go on the internet and look that up a little bit more. It's a day that's been held in South Africa, New York, and other places, and looking at holding it on Hawaii Island and having a ceremony at the base of Mauna Kea. And those are the things that I have to put my energy into, things that I can be a part of, that I can really contribute to. The bigger external chaos of it will work itself out. But for many of us, we have to just go right back to the core, to the mother.
Thank you for that.
Kapahana moku. Yeah, so that's what we're going to be working on here
In
the next week.
any of the Navajo Nation there for that? I know they have really huge issues with their water right now.
There may be. You know, I'll see when I get there next week on the 15th and sit in a ceremony, and we'll see who appears, because I'm not coordinating it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just, you know, I'm attending.
Right.
And I'm bringing the water of Lake Waiau to the ceremony, because they regard that in reverence, because it's, you know, the highest water in the world from the sea floor. So yeah. I'm bringing some of that to add to this spiritual occasion.
Maybe you can hold up also, you know, Maui's water. I know, I'm just conscious of that. Like this week, one of these lawsuits that's there is these injection wells, you know, that have contaminated yes. Maui's water. And then on Oahu, we have the waters of Red Hill, where these fuel tanks have, it turns out, been leaking for a long time. That's into their main aquifer. And here on Kauai, we have at Mahaulepu. You know, we are discovering that we have a real sewage issue in our streams, and then it's probably making its way down into the aquifer for our south side. And then, you know, people have been trying really hard to keep a concentrated animal operation from being right in that sacred ground there, and it is so difficult to stop it. So it is, you know,
right.
Just a drumbeat oh, yeah. of issues, and water, you know, yeah. issues are on all of our islands. And on Hawaii Island, when I read about, and I want to give a shout out to Ku Ching with the lawsuit that there was some success with relative to Pohakuloa, when there's depleted uranium right up there at the top of your guys' watershed, this rough.
Right. We will be lifting up every person and all waterways in the whole Pai Aina of Hawaii for sure. I'm doing that personally, and everyone else will be doing that for their waters, which really in the end will be all water for sure. And I know the time is short on your program, and
yeah.
I really just wanted to emphasize that although I'm here, I'm one of many of us who are here representing Hawaii right now, every crew member on board Hokulea, everyone that came the distance, and everyone that lives here too has just been such a beautiful representation of the spirit of who we are, and what we are and what we contribute to the world. And I couldn't be prouder of everyone. It takes us all. There's not one person that, you know, we single out. It's really about all of us doing what we can, whether it be up here in New York or whether it be home or anywhere else. This is such a beautiful time to recognize everyone that's in any movement, or ones making decisions to step in. And it's just been a beautiful thing to witness through these years, and especially right now at this moment. So many of us are making really big decisions on how we're going to go into the future and what we're going to stand for, and the future of Hawaii indeed, and for all people. And so this is a significant time. And so I just want to say aloha to everyone who has done so much work for our Hawaii, past, present, and future. And just deep respect.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you. I know it's after 11 your time, so thank you for staying up and to be talking to the people of Hawaii, because it's not just Kauai. We've got Maui, Oahu, Hawaii listening in. I can tell we've got New York. We've got Oregon. We've got a number from Japan. You know, different people, Salt Lake, everywhere. So even St. Louis.
Everyone.
Yep. Okay, mahalo. Auntie.
Mahalo to all of you. We keep standing strong as a mountain. We stand firm. We stand true. We stand together. We are all Mauna Kea, and we are all every place, from the mountain to the sea, and we're all in this together. So eo, everybody. Kukia imauna. E holomua no kako. Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So that was really wonderful, hearing from Poa Case in New York City when she's over there to help be receiving the Hokulea. This is Out of the Box. Marshall and Felicia are in here, stepping in for the usual crew. Jonathan J., you might be listening. So Out of the Box is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Hawaii Life and Tahiti Nui, and we so appreciate our partners. We're also going to hear about the e-waste program, and in fact, tomorrow I am going to bring my e-waste down to the new place to be dropping it off, and I'm thankful that they're open, I think, 5 days a week, so let's hear about that.
Attention recyclers, beginning June 1st, Kauai residents and businesses can recycle their electronic waste free of charge 6 days a week. E-waste will be accepted at the Puhi Metals Recycling Center Monday through Saturday from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Puhi Metals is located at 3951 Puhi Road, about a mile from the intersection of Kaumualii Highway. Acceptable e-waste includes computers and accessories, televisions, printers, office equipment, audio and video equipment, and handheld devices. All brands of e-waste will be accepted free of charge with no quantity limits. Services are provided by Resource Recovery Solutions, and e-waste is shipped for recycling to IMS Electronics Recycling in Washington. For more information, call the County Recycling Office at 241-4841, 241-4841, or visit our website at kauai.gov/e-waste, kauai.gov/e-waste. Help keep our garden aisle green. Recycle your e-waste.
KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224CQ, Anahola, K284AL, Haleiwa. KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224CQ, Anahola, K284AL, Haleiwa.
Announcing the return Neil of the Norman Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
Buyers and sellers of properties throughout the Hawaiian Islands. Neil is grateful for Hawaii's continued embrace, supports organic farming, beekeeping, and sustainable agriculture, and stands with KKCR on its mission to provide a much-needed voice and forum for Hawaii's diversity of cultures. Mahalo.
Kevin Bako, MD of Hawaii Compassionate Care, offers medical marijuana certification exams at his office in Kapa'a. Information and appointments available at 808-854-6333. 35 or online at hawaiicompassionatecare.com.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So she was bringing up a lot of really important topics, and, you know, one of them when we were talking about water, you know, Mahalapu, or Maha'ulepu, I need to say it a little bit better. Marshall, did you notice, I believe that made the front page of the paper today, the Mahalapu story?
Yeah, sure did.
You know, can you give us the highlights of that? I think there's been a lot that's come up with the what they call the sanitary survey and the draft environmental impact statement. I got a copy of it. It's like 3,000 or more pages, so it's a lot to look at.
Right. Looks like 2,600 pages in that.
And then there's two other appendices that are that bring it up to something close to, you know, over 3,000, so it's a lot. Yeah. So what does the article say?
Well, Hawaii Dairy Farms says its plans operation in Maha'ulepu Valley provide a model for sustainable agriculture and help protect the environment.
So they're saying that they do a good job.
Right. And it goes on to say that those in opposition to the dairy aren't buying it.
And what are their main points of contention?
She says that, this is Bridget Hammerquist from Friends of Mahaulepu, water contamination, flies, odor, harm to the reefs, possible problems.
Well, I think that there's a lot that has gone on. I've seen much of the letters there, and so it is actually a very big deal when you look at it, because we bring up the contamination of the water streams there. When they first started to look at it, they thought, let's get a baseline study, and well, they expected it to be a pretty clean stream. And so when it had really high ratings of like 8,000, 18,000, 4,000, I mean, the highest that the Department of Health really does is under 3,000. They don't even test beyond that. So these are kind of really radically high tests that are coming out consistently. Like a low test would be something like 4,000. And, you know, that they were like, whoa, what could be happening with that? And then so something that was discovered in the process of looking at that is that probably aqua engineers in the county, that the people who manage the sewage, and we all poop, by the way, so it's not like it isn't sort of everybody's impact. That's where we have to really think about what happens. Like, we don't think what happens when the toilet flushes on the North Shore. It's either going into your septic system or your cesspool, or in Princeville, it's going to be going into their small sewage treatment plant. There's a few small sewage treatment plants, but this stuff has to go somewhere. So they have what they call biosolids, and it gets tilled under the ground. And so it is washing down, it's going into the river, and it is seemingly perhaps making it into the well water. And that's a very big deal if that's happening. And so I wondered if it had some of the little bit stronger details on it. We might have somebody call in at 826-7771 with the exact details. But I saw the sanitary survey that was first produced by the Department of Health. They paid to do that. And it went to the dairy farm and Grove Farm ahead of time, you know, 8 months ahead of time before it went public. So what they did is they looked at it and they said, hey, okay, what they saw, and it was irrefutable in there, was human waste is a part of what is going in that endococcal bacteria stream. And if they do that, they have to put up a health warning. And so they didn't. And these people who were protesting it down there, they went and they put the sign up. They asked me. I went down. I watched them put it up. But within 5 hours before the cement set, people from that area, who knows who exactly it was, came and removed the signs that gave a health warning. But the Department of Health was saying people don't hang out there, but there is a very clear pattern of people playing in the stream there. It's a normal place where the Waiopili stream hits the water. So the other thing that was really interesting between the sanitary survey that came out before they made it public to everybody, it clearly named Grove Farm as a responsible party. And then when they published it to the people, they took that name off. So they kind of sanitized their sanitary survey. And they also took off that it was human feces, that there's definitely markers of it. And some of those markers are things like, you know, caffeine or, you know, pharmaceuticals. There's different things that make it into the water that, you know, it doesn't get scrubbed out in cleaning the biosolids. And so I have looked at the primary documents, because as a programmer for KKCR community radio, people will send these source documents. They're coming right from the government, the Department of Health, the Department of Ag, and so it is known what's in there. And I just wonder, does the article call that particular problem out? I heard just as I was coming over that it had made the front page. So I was curious if they had that detail in there, because it's a very significant detail.
About human waste biosolids being plowed under, no, it doesn't mention that.
Okay, so for 11 years, that's where it was being placed. Now, I wonder, where is it being placed now? We have to put it somewhere, by the way. It has to go somewhere. And what we're learning, too, is that a few years ago, we thought the geologic structure underneath the island was very similar to what is Oahu. And when I've been going to these water resource strategic plans, you know, they know that their baseline information is wrong. What they have had as baseline information for the well waters in Kauai is they take Oahu's geologic structure and just put our rainfall amount on it, and they have anticipated that that's how, you know, that we had this lens of water underneath, but we don't. We have something like a lens, but it's like if you pictured us as a big piece of pumice. And there are all kinds of lava tubes, and there is horizontal traveling of what happens with the water. So this is really something that's only really been understood in the last 10 or 15 years. We did get a call from Nihi. She's not going to be coming in. I was kind of hoping she would, because she comes in with her dad, Adam Asquith, who really understands the geologic structure and the water. But it happens that Mahalapu is a clay soil there. It's one of the rare places where it's really super excellent for growing kalo. They had all kinds of lo'i kalo there, and the clay on the bottom of that, you know, on the soil surface, it does a very good job of holding water on the top and not percolating down. And so it will run off. And, you know, what I saw in some of the letters and the pieces that I know were fed to the paper is that in that survey and in the EIS, because I've looked somewhat at the EIS, we'll do a show on it coming up in the future at some point, but when we look at the environmental impact statement, it straight up says that they didn't really look at the waterways on the land because it was dry when whoever came in and did the survey came in and did the survey. But, you know, we all know it's very different when it's raining than when it's not raining. And in that Poipu area, sometimes it rains very hard, sometimes it doesn't. So there's quite a lot going on with that. And so that's another one of the topics that we will continue to be looking at. And that environmental impact response time is, I think, 45 days from when it's released, so it's like a month and a half. And, you know, as I get these pieces like the study for, you know, the park plans or the marine reserves, is like 2 or 3 inches thick, these documents. I know that this document was a $150 printout at an industrial printer, the end of the road, the KA Beach Park Plan out there. I mean, the KA Park Plan, Hyannis State Plan, that was $225 to print it out. Did we have a call?
You know, that person wanted to report that we were not on the air in Lihue.
So what people can do, we have had a problem with our 91.9, it's on Kahili Mountain. We have a transmitter up there. It is, something's wrong up there. We have to go up with a helicopter and go climb the transmitter, the antenna, and see what's wrong. And I think that's going to happen on Monday. In the meantime, people can listen by going to the website at www.kkcr.org, kkcr.org. Big apologies. I know it's very frustrating because many times people, when they actually listen to the radio, is in the car on their drive home, and they don't have a way to listen to it. And we do so appreciate the $62,255 that we got in donations in the last month in our fund drive. And, you know, we have to schedule the helicopter, and we have to have our person who is somewhat of a volunteer helper but who knows what he's doing get out there. And so I believe that is plan for Monday. It's not like it's just a button being pushed. And so we're an underfunded radio station, you know, running on just a shoestring budget and close to 100 volunteers and a couple meagerly paid managers.
So, great ones, though.
Great ones, yes, great ones. Everybody who's in here is really super coming from the heart. So that's a big deal. Okay, well, I've probably said enough about Mahaulipu, but that environmental impact statement, I am saying, hey, you know, need some help with looking at it. You know, people need a law degree and some research background sometimes to be able to go through this. But, you know, the citizen activism has been really quite strong. And that group is called Friends of Mahaulipu. They've really been amazing. I went to the talk that they did. It was called a fact-finding mission by Scott Enright from the Department of Agriculture. Clarice Gardner from Governor Ige's office was also there. And, you know, it was an impressive amount of work that these people had come up with and shown. They basically did the due diligence of what the state should have done, what Grow Farm should have done, and what Hawaii Dairy Farm should have done. It's really, it's in the wrong place. That's the bottom line. And in looking at why, because I think, oh, you know, it's going to make like 12 jobs or something, and yay for the 12 jobs, and yay for the milk that it's going to make. It is being pasteurized to international standards. And so...
It's going to the Big Island to be processed, yeah?
I think it's going to Oahu. It might be going to the Big Island, but it's likely some of it will go to the military. It'll go to... That's why you have to do the international things, to go to the cruise lines. You know, they need to be able to be doing the stuff that will be export also, but... Some of it, I've no doubt, will make it back here. But, you know, it's amazing that the people have to put the effort out that they have done. And when Scott Enright was there, he made the statement. He said, wow, if every community was as well-researched as this community, Hawaii would be a very different place. But I do happen to know that, you know, many of those people, they've taken loans out on their houses or, you know, like pulling equity out of their homes to be able to be slowing this down, because the impact has the potential to be so profound. It's the dairy is going to have a high density of cattle. You know, it was set as a special agricultural site and like in important ag lands. And when I looked at that, the important ag lands go all the way up the mountain, you know, over the peak. And the definition of important ag lands is supposed to be where you can actually plant this. You know, some of this area is like for a goat. And so they have that. But because they have this, their infrastructure has been reimbursed. So they have gotten $1 million worth of taxpayer money funding, putting in these sprinkler systems that, like, what happens is what they do with the manure and the urine that gets into the settling ponds, it gets sprayed in a sprinkler system. That's the way they deal with it, is they just throw it out onto the top of the ground. And that clay soil is going to grab those nitrates and actually wick them down. You know, it's when you look at the science behind it, it is really hard to understand why this keeps moving forward. If they're very, very rich individuals that own Grow Farm, and it's Pierre Omidyar, the Ulupono Initiative, which is really nice. It sounds great. It's all about resilience. I don't think that they have a bad intention. That's why I don't get why they don't shift and move it somewhere else. They would probably... I mean, they will have to pay that $1 million back of subsidized money that they got, that came from the taxpayers, if they don't put, if they don't complete it. So, I mean, I could see that that's maybe one thing, that tax credit. But the soft costs of being held and held from being able to do it, you know, this is the environmental impact statement is likely to be appealed, because you know, when they say, hey, we're not hurting anything, is a, you know, is the risk in the experiment is so huge.
In the draft environmental impact statement, Hawaii Dairy Farms did elect to discontinue the use of the term zero discharge, acknowledging the amount of nutrients anticipated from the proposed dairy operations could pass through to ground and surface waters. Although they went on to explain that they're going to have thick patches of pasture grass, which will act as an organic net and quickly absorbing manure from the cows. She said that they're actually going to have to add fertilizer to the land because the manure won't be enough to fertilize the soil, and that other efforts to minimize runoff include a fenced 35-foot-wide vegetation buffer on either side of drainage ditches, no application of diluted manure within 50 feet of the ditches, and ongoing monitoring of surface and coastal waters. Just to be balanced about it.
Right.
That is what it says.
Okay, well, one of these shows coming up, we will, you know, go back to looking at that. I have to, it's going to take me a while to look through that document. It is very big and very thick, and so takes a little bit of time. You are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, Out of the Box, standing in here for Jonathan J. This is Felicia and Marshall. So, if people would like to call in, 808-826-7771. We have a little bit of a light line because our tower, our Kahili Mountain Tower, is down right now. So, that big population base doesn't hear it right on the radio.
That's 826-7774 for the studio.
Did they change it? 774 is the office.
All right, let's you and I argue about that
okay,
later on.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it's always been 777-1. We did have to change our phone lines. We had a problem with our main carrier. They couldn't quite fix it. So now we are on Oceanic Time Warner Cable, and I am, again, looking around at, you know, the improvements to the studio. We got brand new soundproofing, so there's less of a hollow echo in the room here now. So, again, we really appreciate all those people who have donated to us. I was kind of listing some of the other things going on and coming up, and Regenerations International Botanical Gardens up at the Food Forest, they're having another really great training. David Wattmar, who is a tree trimmer, he's going to be doing a workshop this week. I'm looking for that date. It is Sunday from 9 to 1. I've done one with him before. It's a, you know, a pruning workshop. Excellent, excellent. There's a little charge on it, but so worth the money. And so it's from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., and that is up at Kalihiwai Ridge, maybe about a half mile up the road on the left in the Waikoa property. We have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, I have comments, questions. One is, what is the plan for them to do, for them to care for dead cows, because they will die, and with thousands of cattle, what do they do with the dead livestock? And then my other question, I know that we're talking about the dairy farm, but I also kind of came in and out. What is our state laws about the human population on our waterways? Cesspools, because in waterway areas they should only be holding tanks. So I just don't know, is there a law for all our waterways?
Well,
on the island?
There is, and so you brought up two different topics, so I'll try and hit them both. Because I did.
Thank you, and I could take it off.
No, there. I mean, you could stay on if you want, because you might have a little bit of other questions. I went to the Hawaii Dairy Farms presentation, and if I remember correctly, and Anaka, my listener, could call in and correct me, but that question did come up. And so they had an area where they did want to manage the deceased cow, and its cows, it's they use like lime and
lye
and compost them basically.
Mm-hmm.
So
it'd be a great job for black soldier flies.
I
have livestock, and one horse dies, you know, a horse dies here and there, but when you're dealing with thousands of animals, I'm just wondering what their numbers are and how many animals do they plan to bury and throw lye on.
Well, I mean, I think that there's going to be a certain percentage. They actually, in their environmental impact statement, I don't have it opened in front of me to pull that out. Like, we could do another call show, and I will try really hard to get the dairy farm to actually come in here. By the way, I have never had them in here. I have invited them a number of times, and they've been very gracious two or three times to schedule an appointment and that they were going to come in. And then they cancel, like, within an hour of the show. Something has come up, and they don't come. And, I mean, really probably something has come up, but I gotten reluctant to really make that big outreach again, because it's difficult for me when I basically have cleared a show for a topic and then
no one shows
and they don't show. So yeah. I will be honest, I haven't tried in the last year, but I have had three times I've had a show scheduled to have them. So I will try again, though, that they could come in when we are looking at the EIS. That might be, and you know, people are like, oh my God, why do we care about that issue so much? It's actually a huge issue if we contaminate our water table, you know, for that Puna, actually Kona Plain is what that is there. That's the Moku of Kona. But the water table there, there's two wells. Like, one of the wells is 750 feet away from, the wellhead is away from the holding pond. And then
said, that's a little too close.
It's really close. And then they said, okay, well, we'll make it 1,000. I did see that in the EIS. I kind of tried to scan it. And your second question was about cesspools and septic tanks. And that's another interesting question. Like, something that I think about is, prior to contact, there were more people living on this island than there is now. And they didn't have big sewage treatment plants. And somehow they managed it. And, you know, when you look at birds or chickens or the nature manages the manure.
Yes.
Nature does.
But not mankind's manure.
Well, there was.
Probably the people in the past were water sources were probably different, and they probably kept that separate.
Well, when you look at the Vahipana, the sacred areas, like, and especially when we talk about down in the Poipu area, oh my goodness, that was such an abundant area. Right now it looks dry and even has cactus and a lot of kaavi.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because the water was redirected. And so when you walk through the areas, I've had tours with people who have the knowledge, and then I've also studied with other cultural practitioners where we go up in the different valleys, and they had waterways that, like little awais that ran around where their housing was and stuff. They actually had something close to what could be considered water running through their area. And I don't know if we have an Akamai listener who does know how sewage was managed, because when you go in these narrow valleys, they're not that wide. So where do they go to the bathroom, and how does it make it down without having the river just be basically
sewage? Well, Felicia,
sewage.
They weren't using 5 gallons of water to flush with. They had a very different system, and when you use water and you're flushing it, I just would say that coming from an area where water is major. I was shocked when I moved here 20 years ago.
From where?
To find that, what do you mean, you allow cesspools by water? By law in the waterways, you can't have anything but what we call a solid holding tank, and that is pumped out, and it doesn't leach. And people do live near the water, but they have holding tanks.
Well, most of the places, I know, like the Hanalei Watershed, Hui, they got some big grant to help people who couldn't afford to change over their cesspools, changed to septic systems. Now, any new building or any new expansion on a house, any new permit requires a septic system. You can't do a cesspool. So there are grandfathered cesspools. Like, I live in Kilauea, and they estimate there are 600 roughly cesspools there. And so at the Kilauea Neighborhood Association meeting, I thought it was a great suggestion that, you know, typically costs $15,000 to $20,000 to replace a cesspool. And many of the places, the lots aren't big enough to put a septic system in. You know, it takes a leach field, and so there might not be room for the leach field. So that the idea is of maybe we can get together and everybody put that $15,000 in, that we could get a small-scale sewage treatment plant in Kilauea. That's a community-based way of trying to be able to deal with it. Now, that's up on a plateau. It's not right next to a waterway. But so, you know, you're bringing up a good point, and it's hard to know how to deal with it. But when you look at what the river water quality tests happened down there at Kilauea Stream as it comes out of Kahili, very little fecal content. Hanalei River is actually really pretty good, too. Now, Willy Willy, it's bad, you know, but nothing is as bad as Waiopili Stream in Mahalapu.
Wow, wow. Well, awesome, very good, and it's great to enlighten people, because we're in an area where I feel people are water rich. When you come from an area of water poor, I think you respect it.
Where did you come from?
I come from New Mexico.
Okay, and, you know, my childhood was dominantly in Arizona and Colorado, and so, you know, we can have Arizona's annual rainfall in a day here. And, you know, they know better how to manage the water, but they're drinking the fossilized water. And there's big wars between Colorado, Arizona, probably New Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
Over
yeah.
The water.
Over that one little Rio Grande River.
And the Colorado River. And when we saw the Animas River, we just had a person on here, Pua Case, talking about the Native Americans, indigenous people being concerned about their waters. They just opened a gold mine, you know, holding tank into the Animas River, put all this pollution downstream, went into the Navajo Reservation. You know, there are big challenges. And I know in Colorado, I'm just kind of educating the population that might take a lot of water for granted. If the ground freezes before the first snowfall, that's really a rough thing, because then as the snow melts, the ground is still frozen. It's been insulated all year. It's frozen, and it's, so it doesn't go into the groundwater. And Colorado is allowed to have its groundwater, where Arizona and probably New Mexico get the runoff. And so
yeah.
if the first snow falls when the mountain hasn't frozen, then Arizona and New Mexico are in trouble, because the water's going to go into the ground in Colorado. And, you know, there's very big issues up there. And then as we add the fracking to it and we start to contaminate those waterways, it's huge.
It is huge, yeah. Well, keep up the conversation. Water is our life, and we need it. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Aloha.
Mm-hmm.
So the article ends, Felicia, with how to read the draft environmental impact statement. You can go to hawaiidairyfarms.com. They also have directions for how to comment and the mailing addresses. Also, hard copies have been sent to all the public libraries in Kauai. The comment period is for 45 days. It ends July 25th.
July 25th. Okay, so that is a big deal, you know, for people who are concerned about it. So it's here's another piece that's a little rough, is the same people who did the environmental impact statement are the people who are putting it in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, so they're saying, oh, we're not doing any damage.
It mentions that. It is...
something called Global 70 or something like
Group
that.
70
Group 70
International. Let's see. The draft EIS was extensively prepared by Group 70 International, the very firm that is credited with developing Hawaii Dairy Farm's waste management plan. And Bridget Hammerquist asks, how could anyone conclude that the independent environmental impact statement has been conducted if prepared by the same company who prepared Hawaii Dairy Farm's dairy plan?
Right. It's, again, trust us. We're not doing any damage.
Right.
And so the challenge is that the impact can be very, very significant. So that's that. Looks like we might have Thomas of the Jungle Jukebox is Dove tonight. From the Evolve show. Very good. Hey, Thomas.
Yeah.
Can you load me up with that song from Nako Bear
Imua.
Is that Imua?
That's Imua.
I will go to the volcano. We were talking about them, and Pua Case was on the show earlier, and then Thomas is really good with music, and I just know, oh, I like that song, and what's it called? I don't remember. But Imua, which means move forward. So at the end of the show, I'm going to close with Imua, and he'll load me up in the right place and have it stopped. It's kind of funny because we each do different things, and so the talk show people, at least this one, is musically nervous when I use the equipment. We've got a lot of things that happen in here.
We're just responsible for knowing what our phone numbers are.
Yeah, we know how to answer the phone, and the music people often don't know how to answer the phone. So that's what's going on there. So when we were talking to Pua Case, it was kind of interesting that she did not... she said that there wasn't a lot of discussion at New York about the presidential election. I have almost had to go offline because I've been so... disturbed to see it. We was going to have some people who are our delegates to go to Washington, D.C., come in and talk, but they, one's at a funeral on the mainland and different things like that. Have you been following it much, Marshall? You are more able to watch it.
Yeah, so I can't put it down. Are you kidding? It's so fascinating.
Okay, so tell me about it.
Well, I mean, if you look at the Republican Party right now, it just sort of continues to implode. First, Donald Trump was untouchable, and the establishment denounced him. Then he became the presumptive nominee, and the establishment embraced him. And now some of the top tier of the establishment are starting to denounce him again. Lindsey Graham says he will not vote for him. This is large.
But they don't have superdelegates anymore, right?
They don't have superdelegates, right. So there's this almost whispering talk of backroom things going on where they called it a potential convention coup. They could change some rules, do something else, and say it doesn't really matter who everybody voted for. We can't have this man. And figure out some way to deny him the nomination. We'll see if that happens, but there's some talk, so it's fascinating.
Well, I have seen a few little clips of Paul Ryan. You had brought up that if there is a three-way split or different pieces like that, and it kind of, there's a presumptive, you went through the little clockwork of, or the pathway of what happens if there's no clear majority winner for the president position, that it would end up being Paul Ryan. And I
Well, there's a couple steps in between.
There's a couple steps in between, but I mean, where it could end up is Paul Ryan. And
there's a pathway to it.
There's a pathway to it. And, you know, I now whenever I see him speaking, he's speaking with the whole crowd of people behind him sort of cheering him, or it's always seemingly in a presidential setting.
Oh, you should see some of the commercials he's put out. He looks very much like he's running for president. But, you know, we should put the caveat that he could not become president that way. He could become acting president. We could end up with an acting president and not a president at all.
So I have seen that. And then I've also seen where there's some stuff with Joe Biden. I don't really want to bring, you know, I haven't been able to vet well enough some of these pieces that are coming out that are, you know, really I'll just say the Democratic nominee for president, the presumptive Democratic nominee, really has a lot of skeletons in the closet that are bubbling to the surface. And so there's a big challenge there too. And when you know, there's seemingly, there probably every time is a lot of manipulation on how the voting happens. And even if it's not intentional manipulation, I think something that can happen is that localities are underfunded. You know, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, if this election is teaching us anything, it's how these are just private clubs run by a bunch of people. You know, maybe big insiders at the top level and just folks down at the local level. And what I've watched with the folks at the local level here, both at the precinct level on Kauai and at the state level, is that they are, for the most part, I would say, operating in integrity. Because both events that I've been to have been by solid Hillary Clinton supporters, and they have conceded gracefully or graciously that Bernie Sanders is the clear choice of Hawaii. And so it hasn't seemed like a rigged thing here.
Yeah, and they're grateful to have the infusion of energy.
Yeah. You know, I mean, they overwhelmed might flow in there too, but yes. Mm-hmm. But I would say graceful, if mm-hmm. not grateful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard to be grateful for big lines, maybe. But anyway, it hasn't been bad here. But when you see across the nation, you know, like when California, they haven't, you know, even counted these ballots that are somehow non-conforming ballots. You know, if they aren't exactly the ballot that's supposed to be there, they, you know, if it's a cross platform or, you know, absentee or these different things. Actually, the absentee got done, but there's, you know, they're saying, you know, hundreds of thousands of ballots haven't been counted yet, and that was seen in New York, and, you know, Arizona had a really huge issue, and, you know, they just kind of moved past it. They didn't fix it, you know, and I'm glad that didn't happen here, but it's happened in a lot of places, and so I'm saying whether by intention or incapacity, it doesn't seem like it's been a very fair system, and I think people are tired of it. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we really need to look at the whole Electoral College.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, something that may come out of the Sanders candidacy is changes to the Democratic nomination process. At least it looks like we'll get some of that, very possibly the elimination of the superdelegates. Or some other concessions to make it easier for insurgent candidates to make it in terms of the electoral college. I haven't heard about changing that yet. Have you?
No. I mean, insiders say, no, you don't ever want to do that. I mean, it's the difference between a republic and a democracy. And the United States is a republic, not a democracy, though we say we're a democracy. But when we have an apathetic public towards voting, it's because of these problems. There's little fixes in there to just, you know, tip the scale away from the will of the voters. And When I was looking at like how I was feeling about it, I have to call it true grief. Mm-hmm. I feel grief over it because, you know, when I go, well, you know, what is that grief? And I think for me, it's the shame of these needless wars. And I will just come right out and say it, you know. Three concrete and steel buildings did not go through free fall symmetric collapse in 4 hours from two planes, you know, and that has been the catalytic moment to have the Patriot Act, which is supposedly for the security of the citizen, but it is really for the containment of the citizen. And we have gone into these wars that are so unrighteous, and these people didn't do something to us, and when we are ostensibly told who did it to us, which is, you know, really they were Saudis, supposedly, you know, and but we went after Afghanistan, and we went after Iraq, and we're still buddies with the Saudis, and we're still arming the Saudis. I mean, none of it makes any sense, and it's very, very frustrating that the mainstream media obscures rather than connects the dots. And so when I see things, it just happens to be a nuance of it, but these little babies washed up in the shoreline along Libya from these boats that have, you know, flipped over. You know, we've displaced so many people, and to me, it's such a huge issue, it's so big that it's not easy to just say, oh, well, you know, let's keep going. Because, and we squander and waste our own soldiers. We hurt our own people. And that, to me, is what this election has been about, is war or peace. And I don't want any more war. And I know, like, I ran for office last time. I'm not running this time. But, you know, losing my own election paled in comparison to seeing that people would be wanting a person who is really a perpetrator of war and is making a lot of money for people in war. You just look at who are making these donations, both to the personal foundation and to her campaign, and you know, it's just it's egregious the role that money has played in these wars, and they haven't been accurately reported what's happened. And so, you know, I think as a woman, you know, when people go, yeah, but aren't you glad a woman has won? And I'm going, no, I'm not. You know, I mean, there is a woman running for president, and that's Jill Stein. You know, I can feel better about Jill Stein. I know Gary Johnson, there is, I see he's the libertarian candidate, that there is more movement behind him. Many people want Bernie Sanders to, you know, switch horses and go over to the Green Party. I can't see him doing that. It's much, much harder than what people say. I think it's not a reasonable expectation.
No, and he's been very, very clear that he will do whatever he can to prevent Donald Trump from becoming president and creating a very strong third party showing in the general election. It's not that.
Right, and then, but that's another thing when we have this fear-based thing. Oh, you know, we just can't have this one guy who says terrible things, and he does say terrible things. We have to have the person who actually enacts terrible things. So that's interesting. All right, it's almost time for, what are you calling the show tonight? Is it still Evolve?
Yeah.
Evolve. And so we're going to go out with Naco Bear, as Auntie Pua Case was speaking about, and my favorite programmer Thomas is going to help me. There it goes. This has been Out of the Box with Felicia and Marshall for Jonathan. Yeah.